Live from the Civic Media World Headquarters in Madison, Wisconsin, it's the Todd Albaugh Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Albaugh.
Across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide on the Civic Media app. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Todd Albaugh, along with our producer, the outstanding Mr. Aaron Zommers, on the board in the other room there. It is Thursday, October 12th, 2023, 6 minutes now past the hour of 2 o'clock. Glad to have you along with us. Coming up at the bottom of this hour, Tim Grierson is going to come in with some lighter news and information today. He is America's favorite film critic. He'll be joining us live from Los Angeles, California. And he went to the Taylor Swift movie. And now maybe I miss, it's a movie, but it's not like a documentary. It's her performing. What do you call those, Mrs. Operas? A performance movie?
I guess a concert film.
Concert, thank you. A concert film. And she was at her own movie, at her own concert film last night, looking spectacular, by the way. I do not believe that Travis Kelce was there. Her football NFL boyfriend from the Chiefs. He probably is practicing. I don't know. But anyway, Tim Grierson's going to be here at 2:30 and talk about the Taylor Swift film and also other big films coming up later on this fall. Want to finish up this subject we've been talking about the first hour. And again, my many thanks to Alex Scher. He is a local reporter here for the State Journal in Madison, also a member of the Jewish community, giving us a firsthand account of what it feels like to be someone of the Jewish faith in our local Wisconsin communities. Appreciate him so much. And want to pick up on that plate before the break, some of the cuts from former President Trump and also current U.S. Senator Tommy Tuberville, who are not quite as courageous. What's your thought on this? 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. Let's go to the phones. Dick, right here in Madison, listening, I assume, on WMDX. Thanks for holding through the break, Dick. What say you?
Well, after hearing that from Trump, I mean, I'm surprised he didn't say give him time. Oh, there's very fine people on both sides.
Right.
Is that going to be next?
Right.
Well, you know, after hearing that, honest to goodness, not lock him up. Get the straitjacket.
Yeah.
The guy is certifiably insane. And for him to ever get near power again. I mean, the other thing, he's infatuated with Putin as well. He thinks he's really smart, right. You know, and goes on and on about him.
And
well, who's Putin real good friends with in the Middle East? Iran.
Exactly.
Hmm. Yeah. So, but, and also when he was in office, my son was stationed in Okinawa when he had his little word war at the beginning until he became pen pals with the guy and called him brilliant with
North Korea. Yeah. Kim
Jong-il. North Korea. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Cooper says, yeah, that was interesting being stationed there and having, you know, knowing that missiles are flying back and forth. Yeah. The guy, how can anybody be down with that?
It's hard for me to understand, but that's, and that's why I wanted to play it, so people heard it out of his own mouth, so don't take my word for it. Listen to the guy. But, Dick,
no,
always...
I'm glad you played it.
Always appreciate you listening. Thanks for calling in. We appreciate you. Have a great day. Let's go over to Caledonia. Jack in Caledonia. Again, thanks for holding through the break. Thanks for listening. What say you?
Yeah, just a couple things, and I do have a question about the Gaza, so if you could answer that. But my comment about Trump saying people are smart... Hamas was able to elude all the intel on this attack. Okay, mm-hmm. Nothing. You know, nobody knew they were doing it. So stupid people don't do that. You know, wasn't an accident.
There are reports multiple reports saying that the Egyptian government did give the Netanyahu government a heads up, and that will be a political situation, obviously, for the people of Israel to resolve. But it appears that someone, the Egyptians, at least, had a heads up on it from what's being reported.
But nothing ever came of it. Okay, U.S. didn't know about it. You know, the Israelis' defense didn't know about it. Okay, maybe somebody told
Netanyahu. Yeah,
and he decided not to tell anybody. I find that hard to believe. The other question I have is, I see people that are pro Palestinians, and they're saying that the Palestinians Israel is keeping the Palestinians poor or harming them. Mm-hmm. And I thought all the Jews were moved out of Gaza. I thought they're run by Hamas.
Well, again, that,
so can somebody explain to me why people are saying that the Jews are persecuting the people that live in Palestinians? I can't figure that out.
There and again, there's a political level here, but with the Israeli and Palestinian conflict, that the line that you've alluded to is that because of the Israeli sanctions on the Gaza area, it makes it very difficult for some of the Palestinians in Gaza to live. Remember that Hamas, a separate entity from Palestinians, Hamas is a terrorist group. Not every Palestinian is in Hamas. Hamas uses innocent civilian Palestinians for shields. And so it is a legitimate argument, in my opinion, to talk about the conditions in Gaza. But none of that, in my opinion, justifies a mass murder genocide of what Gaza did to Israel last weekend.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I don't think anybody...
But I will quickly say, Jack, I am in favor of humanitarian aid coming in for Egyptian to innocent Palestinian citizens, like food and water, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But, Jack, appreciate the call. Thanks for listening. Got to go to a break, but thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Jack in Caledonia. Take your calls the other side if you'd like to as well. 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. Also talk about what's popping with Robin Voss. More news on impeachment. Back after this, this is the Todd Allball Show, and this is the Civic Media Radio Network. Wherever it may lead, and having fun doing it. Welcome back to the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network for this Thursday, October 12th, 2023, 15 now on the time and temperature sign here in the state capital of Madison, a block off the Capitol Square, high above State Street in the world headquarters of Civic Media. Along with Mr. Aaron Zommers, Todd Allball, glad to be with you. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, Tim Grierson, America's favorite film critic, will be here talking about the Swiftie concert movie. He was there last night at the premiere. He will tell us how it is. I'm hoping it's good because I kind of want to see it in a way.
I know what he's going to say because I did a little sneak peek. I looked at his review. I won't tell you, but I looked at his review.
We shall see. Programming note, if you want even more toddy, and with weather like this, it might be a hot toddy. But if you want a little toddy in the afternoon, the Devils, Crudy and Dom, are on vacation today. They're gearing up for more touring around the state, so they have kindly asked me to fill in. So I will be guest hosting the entire 2 hours of Devil's Advocates this afternoon, along with Nate Wagehout, their producer. So tune in for that. Going to talk about National Farmers Day, another news breaking of the hour after Matt Flynn directs. So it's another 2 hours of Todd filling in for Devils. Looking forward to that and appreciate the opportunity from 4 until 6 this afternoon. Right now, though, Mr. Zommers, it's time once again for a little update. What's poppin' with Robin Voss?
Love to hear the Robin go tweet, 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 rockin' Robin, tweet, tweet, rockin' Robin.
A little what's poppin' with Robin Voss, as Craig Bach likes to call him, the popcorn king. Has a big popcorn business. I thought this was like a little small. Apparently, he makes like $1 million a year or more off his popcorn business.
That's it.
That's where the
plenty.
Money's at. It's popping.
Plenty.
Well, here's what's happening. And stand by. I see we have another call. We'll take Wisco Paul in a second. I want to get to this. From the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Molly Beck headline says, Voss says impeachment of Protasiewicz is still on the table. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss is leaving open the possibility of initiating a process to remove a newly elected Wisconsin Supreme Court justice should he disagree with her handling of a lawsuit before the high court that challenges the state's legislative maps that favor the GOP. Voss told reporters today that while he's not moving forward with impeaching Supreme Court Justice Janet Protasiewicz on the floor today, it is possible lawmakers will make the unprecedented move in the future. Now, here's what happened. He was all about this impeachment, and he thought he'd be smart. And so he dialed up a couple of his old friends, former conservative Justice David Prosser, former Republican member of a speaker of the state assembly. And of course, David Prosser, he's a small, I mean, physically, he's a small man. He's kind of a meek man. I'm not sure if he ever ate meat in his life. He's a pasty man. He's a pale man. And this is what was entertaining for a while, is when he was Supreme Court Justice, he wasn't on his meds or something, and he went bizonzo, and he went over and he choked. He put his hands on the liberal court, Supreme Court Justice from my hometown, Richland Center, Ann Walsh Bradley, and he got in a little trouble there. And they said, well, you know, David, it's probably time to go to a home or something. And so I'm not sure what he's been doing since he got off the court. And so Robin Voss went to him, also went to former conservative Justice Wilcox, and I believe Pat Rogensack, who just got off the court, was in this little cabal as well. And he said, I want you to look at this and tell me, should I impeach Janet Protasiewicz? Well, apparently Justice Prosser is back on his meds, and he said, you know, Robin, probably not a good idea. And he said, don't do it. Then Justice Wilcox, former Justice Wilcox, a conservative, also said, yeah, Robin, don't do this. So now Robin's in a little bit of a bind because these former conservative justices are saying, don't do it. But yet some of the wing nuts in his caucus are saying, do it. And so apparently Speaker Voss has come down on, well, let's just wait until she rules on this. And if she doesn't, if we don't like the ruling, then we'll go ahead and impeach her. So that's where Robin Voss is at these days. Got himself into a bit of a pickle up there on the building a block and a half away. What say you? 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. Let's go to the phones. Wisco Paul, thanks for holding. Wisco, go ahead.
Oh, thank you for taking my call, Todd. Believe it or not, I do have a circle of friends that include Republicans, independents, and myself, leaning Democrat. I consider myself a conservative,
sure,
or middle-of-the-road Democrat.
Yeah.
That being said, the Trump Republicans, I have a hard time with that one after January 6th.
Right.
In my mind, the man shouldn't be running for anything. But that's another story. But as far as fair maps are concerned, it's pretty much a unanimous consensus among my friends and acquaintances. They want them. They want fair maps. They like swing districts. They don't. Nobody should have a job for life. You're going to have districts that are totally Republican. I mean, that's just or totally Democrat. I mean, that's just the nature of things. But to sit down and draw maps where it's unfair and you end up really with no democracy, that just is not right. And to me, Voss likes being a shadow government, because he can go to assembly people now and say, you go my way or I'm going to primary you.
Right.
And that's just insane. I mean, so they have to kneel down to Voss, the popcorn man.
and don't forget, he got primaried himself by a Trump guy in his own district. And the guy came 300 votes or so from knocking Voss off.
That was too funny, wasn't it?
Right?
Wow.
And apparently, from what I know, I still have some Republican friends as well. Apparently, Voss is thinking of not running for re-election.
Well, that would probably be a good thing, but he needs to let the election dictate. The Republicans have been doing it for, I don't know, a dozen years or more with the Supreme Court. Mm. And it's never really been a bipartisan deal for, 10, 15 years. But he needs to lay off this. And it would be good if he would retire. The bottom line here, most people, I don't know what the percentage is, Todd, want fair maps, whether they're independents, Republicans, or Democrats.
It's like 70%. It's like 70%
right,
of the state.
That's the only way you're going to have healthy government, Todd. So, boss, just lay off this and retire, go back to your popcorn business. With all the money you made. So,
fantastic.
Thanks for listening to me.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to me today. touch.
Thanks, all Wisco. Right, appreciate you, Wisco. Paul, always a pleasure to have him on. 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. Let's go to Mark from the SAC. Mark, thanks for listening. What say you?
Yeah, and on the fair districts, I mean, let's make the districts actually in compliance with the Constitution of the state of Wisconsin to consist of contiguous territory and be in as compact a form as practicable is for representatives. And for the Senate districts, senators shall be elected by single districts of convenient contiguous territory. Now, contiguous does not mean which apparently the new Republican and Republican judiciary are justices on the Supreme Court. Well, if they're connected by a street, that makes them contiguous. Mm-hmm. And I say, you know, that these guys should actually have their graduation from junior high revoked. So I went in and checked to see at what grade level you would learn the word contiguous. And my guess, and from the other words I saw there, somewhere between 6th and 7th grade that you should probably learn that word. And maybe I'm kind of a nerd, because back when I was a kid, my folks got Reader's Digest, and one of my favorite things of that was increasing your word power. And so I just loved, you know, finding the big $40 words when I was just a kid, and you know, mm-hmm. and learning the definitions of those. But these guys, the intellectual dishonesty on the part of our current conservatives on the Supreme Court, how they can stretch the word contiguous to mean whatever the hell they think it should mean is beyond me. I mean, some of these people went to Christian colleges or Christian high schools and stuff like this. But wasn't the whole thing of complete honesty is what you're supposed to be?
Right.
And to stretch the definition of the word contiguous to meet what your political ambitions are is just so dishonest, intellectually and actually just dishonest.
Mark, what's your take on this? Why don't you take on this? To this story by Molly Beck in the Journal Sentinel. I mean, now, you know, Voss is all about impeachment. Now he asked former conservatives, members of his own party, justices, and even they, even a conservative like David Prosser at Wilcox, said, look, you got to look at the law, buddy, and it just doesn't match up. And no, you shouldn't impeach her. And then over in the Senate, you had Chris Kapinga, the president of the Senate Republican, coming out this week and saying, yeah, that whole bipartisan or so-called, you know, redistricting bill that Voss said they'd put through and make the maps fair. Yeah, we don't have the votes for it here. It was never a real offer. So, I mean, it's just, again, these Republicans, Mark, in my opinion, cannot govern.
Well, they cannot govern, and they're doing it dishonestly. And, you know, the thought just occurred to me, you know, that the lawyers that assisted conspired with the Republicans to produce, you know, that maps that were not in compliance with the Constitution back in 2010, mm-hmm. and the newest ones, because lawyers actually take a vow to uphold the law as well.
Right.
I mean, they conspired with the Republicans to produce maps that are not constitutional. And the fact that, you know, Justice Hagedorn, Rogan Sack, Ziegler, and mm-hmm. And the other one escapes me at the moment, Bradley,
yep.
that the they conspired together with those to approve maps that are not in compliance with the Constitution. And Justice Hagedorn helped Scott Walker draw up the maps in 2010,
right,
or 2011 maps. I mean, that asked them to define contiguous, and that a grade school could say, well, that's not what teacher told me.
Right.
That's why I look it up in the dictionary. That's not what it means. But they couldn't even graduate grade school, probably.
Mark, always a pleasure, Mark. Thanks so much. Mark from the SAC, always a pleasure to get your comments on that. Yeah, I mean, Mark's got a great point. And again, when he goes back to refer to it, that the way the laws say contiguous, and that because I was there working for a Republican in the Senate in 2010 or 11 when these maps were drawn, the first iteration, not the current iteration, but the first iteration. And yeah, they created islands. Okay. In other words, the boundaries didn't touch, and they somehow, you know, used rationale to say you have these islands both. And by the way, it wasn't just islands for Republicans. A lot of them were islands for Democratic districts as well. It's called packing and cracking. So you pack together, if you're Republicans, you pack together as many Democratic votes as possible so that you have fewer legislators or less representation, or you crack. In other words, you break up a Democratic population of voting population, so that they're so splintered that there isn't a lot of, you know, no one area of a Democratic stronghold has much say in the legislature. So, yes, to Mark's point, it was intentional. I was there. I can attest to that firsthand, and we shall see. But again, great reporting again by Molly Beck and the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel today that Robin Voss saying, yeah, we're not going to move ahead for impeachment for now on Jenna Protasiewicz. We'll talk more about that this afternoon at 4 o'clock of the Devil's Advocates, where I co-host for Crudy and Dom, who are off today. When we come back, Tim Grierson, America's favorite film critic. He was at the Swifty movie last night. What did he think? We'll get his review and much more. Don't go anywhere. This is the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You know I adore you. I'm crazier for you than I was at 16. Lost in a film scene, waving homecoming queens. Marching band playing, I'm lost in the lights. American glory.
Welcome back to the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Glad to have you along with us, pursuing truth wherever it may lead and having fun doing it. Here is the segment of the having fun doing it part. We welcome back at 33 past the hour now on this Thursday, October 12th. One of my all-time favorite guests, Mr. Zommers, in the year we've been doing this, there's like a handful of people that I told our executive producer, Chris Pauls, geez, if we can get that person back, it'd be fantastic. And here he is joining us live from beautiful Los Angeles, California, Tim Grierson. Now, our producer calls him America's film critic, but Tim, that is not a self-title.
No, I was saying before we went on that a buddy of mine, who's an editor of mine, a good friend of mine, a long time ago, jokingly nicknamed me America's favorite film critic. I have tried to get him to stop doing it. He refuses. I refuse to accept that as my moniker. Okay. But thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
It's an absolute pleasure. I love your insight. I really want to at some point bring the show out to Los Angeles. And you're the kind of guy there's another person that comes on the show, John Roach. I'm like, I want to sit down and have a bourbon or a cup of coffee with him. And when I come to Los Angeles, I just want to sit down and like have a bottle of wine and talk movies with you.
That sounds amazing. You name the time. I will happily do that.
All right. Thank you. Well, that'd be fun, Mr. Zommers. Todd on half a bottle of wine. We'll see what I'm like on the air.
I'm going to invite myself. Yeah.
All right, very good. In all seriousness, Tim, thank you so much. Lots to get to. Let's get right into it because we kind of promoed this a little bit. Now, you know, I would not call myself a Swiftie per se, but I think Taylor Swift is an enormously talented artist. And what I admire about her is that, number one, she has a hot boyfriend, but number two, that she actually has been registering voters. 34,000 voters she's gotten. And she's not a partisan person. She's just like, hey, young people, get active and vote. So I admire what she does socially. I admire her performance and talents. So Tim Grierson, you went to the new Taylor Swift concert movie. What is your review?
Yes, I went to it last night. It's called Taylor Swift, The Eras Tour. And for people who went to her most recent tour, they will know what that means. What she did is she did a select number of songs from each of her albums throughout her career. So it's basically a career-spanning concert, which is crazy to think because she's only 33,
right,
and yet she's put out 10 albums in a very short amount of time. And so it's basically spanning two decades of her career. The movie is 2 hours and 49 minutes long, and I pointed that out to say her shows were 3.5 hours long. And so
Incredible.
It's actually slightly shorter than her actual concerts if you went to them. I think the movie is really, really fun and really, really, really well done. Yeah, I think I know I was going to ask you, Todd, before we started, but you answered my question already, which was where do you sort of put yourself on the Swifty spectrum, yeah, I guess, as it were? Because I think if you are a fan of Taylor Swift, you don't need any reviewer to tell you that you want to see this movie. That's why they've already sold like $100 million of advance tickets, because yes, so many of her fans are, you know, they either went to the show and loved it or couldn't get in to the show and really want to see it.
Yeah.
And the movie, I think, absolutely like justifies its runtime. It absolutely makes the case for why she's, you know, the mega popular pop star that she is. I think one of the things that's really impressive, they were filmed here in Los Angeles at SoFi Stadium. She did
Oh, wow.
like four or five shows
yeah
here. And SoFi is a huge place. That's where the St. Louis, or where the St. The LA Rams play. Yeah. And it's a huge, huge, huge venue. And one of the things I think the movie does really well is it gives you the sense of scale and spectacle. But at the same time, it's also very intimate as well. Like there's cameras, get like these nice close-ups of Taylor Swift. So you really feel like even if you went to her shows, you will be more up close to Taylor Swift than you would be if you had been at the show. Right. And the mixture of just like this, the big spectacle and the really kind of intimate moments when she's doing more acoustic material is really, really nicely done. And it's just one heck of a show. I mean, I had not gone to the concert, but I had seen a bunch of clips from it and seen people's TikToks and stuff. And I think the movie does a really great job of just emulating the sense of what it must have been like to be, frankly, run over by a truck by Taylor Swift. You know, I was thinking, I mean, I've been to like shows like U2 and Bruce Springsteen, like this big stadium three-hour event things. And after those shows were over, I went home just exhausted. Yeah. Just feel like I've been like physically pummeled just because of all of the music and all the showmanship and all of that. That's what it's like seeing the Eras Tour, seeing that film. I would also say if folks can see it in IMAX, depending on where they are, I would definitely recommend that. I was able to see it in IMAX last night. And not only is the sound tremendous and all of that, it just looks really great. And so the bigger screen that you can see it on, the better.
That's fantastic. No, I think I first, I mean, I was, you know, people, some people forget, especially young, young people, that she started out as a solely a country artist. And I saw her, I mean, oh, geez, the COVID, my time, my sense of time is thrown off, but it was probably 5 years ago, maybe, or maybe more, when she performed, you know, All You're Gonna Be Is Mean on the Grammys. And she played the guitar. I mean, part of it, I think, was acoustic. And then she had her band kind of come in partway through. And I'm like, this woman is a star. I mean, she knows instruments, she has the vocals, and the two things that I've always admired, Tim, about artists are people who can write well in any genre, and also number two, just pure performers. I've been to Springsteen, I've never seen U2, but I've never seen Taylor Swift in concert, but my understanding is she is just a performer's performer.
Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate. And I think your two criteria for artists that you really respect, that's Taylor Swift. She's a heck of a performer. There's so much energy in the show. And she doesn't do the albums chronologically. She mixes it up. But it's album after album after album, just not in the order that they came out. And she's doing that partly because she wants to think about sort of pacing and tone in the film, because there are more up-tempo sections, then there are more sort of acoustic meditative sections, and then back to up-tempo dance music. And in either guise, she's really, really accomplished. And one of the things that you take away from the movie is just she's so fully confident. She so knows what she's doing. And also, as she mentions in the movie, these albums were written at different times in her life when she was pursuing different genres. So to your point, Todd, about like her writing her own material, not only does she do that, she writes in a bunch of different genres. And so watching the movie is a reminder, oh, she does country. Oh, she does pop. Oh, she does sort of rock. She does sort of like an R&B thing, kind of like electro R&B sort of stuff. And so she's bounced around genres a lot, and you get to see the different personalities of both her and the music that she was making at different times. And so while it's not chronological, so you don't see a straight evolution from Taylor Swift, the teenager, to Taylor Swift, the, you know, multi-Grammy winning 33-year-old that she is now, you can, if you know her music, you definitely appreciate like, oh, she's just continued to grow and evolve and become more sophisticated along the way. There really aren't a lot of artists who are as popular and as successful as she is, who have really, I mean, she's very much worked in a pop mainstream mode. I mean, let's be honest about that. I mean, she's playing for the masses, but within that framework, she's done a bunch of different things and tried a bunch of different things. And it's hard to think of an artist that successful who's also been that adventurous at the same time.
I'm sorry. I just, no, I would argue also a great role model for young women, women of any, I mean, to have a woman do this in this industry and be that great of a business sense. I mean, too often I think that we've seen women and minorities get taken advantage of in this industry. And here's a woman that said, I'm doing it my way. I'm going to live my life and my truth and my business, because I'm reading reports. I mean, she's going to get millions and millions of dollars off this movie, but also so are movie theaters. Talk a little bit about this. This is kind of a way, I know you love seeing movies in theaters, so do I. This is a big thing for movie theaters.
Yes, what she did essentially is decide that she didn't want to wait so long for a traditional studio to say, yes, we'll put out your movie, but it might take, you know, 8 months, 10 months, 12 months, 14 months. She essentially, this is very much like I'm simplifying it, but right, basically right. Went to AMC theaters, yep, and said, hey, would you put out my movie? And they're like, yeah, we'll put out your movie. Right. Like, we'd absolutely would love to do that. Yeah. And not only, so it's almost like a direct line between her and the theater. She's not really working with a distributor in the conventional sense. And that's really impressive. That's a kind of a new model. I don't know if you've seen that now Beyonce is doing something similar. She's going to do, I think, around December, I think, the idea is for her show. I find that, to your point about doing things your own way, you know, when you have the power that Taylor Swift has, you can do that.
Right.
I mean, to me, that is a reflection of just how powerful and also, frankly, how sort of engaged she is in trying other things, not going in a conventional way and just saying, I want to put the movie out this way. I want to put it out now. I'm powerful enough that people will want that to happen. I mean, the estimates kind of keep going up and up, and so it's always a bit of a grain of salt. But I think people are thinking $100 to $150 million is going to make this weekend. And put this way, there is...
This weekend?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, put it this way. There are about 8 or 9 movies that have moved their release date. They either moved up or moved back their release date because they did not want to be on this weekend. The Exorcist Believer, which opened this past weekend, was supposed to open October 13th. When the Taylor Swift news was announced, they moved up to October 6th. So they just want... This is the craziest thing to think about. This is October.
Right.
This is horror movie season. Right. The Exorcist Believer is part of a franchise that a lot of people know and like a lot.
Yeah.
And yet, they were like, we want to get out of the way of Taylor Swift. That's such a big deal. That is an expression of just how influential and powerful she is. And I would also add to the thing that you had said, Todd, about the other sort of things that she does in the world. She's a, you know, she gives a lot to different charities and the different cities where she plays. And so she also does that. So, you know, I think sometimes, like I said, if people are, you know, if they're Taylor Swift fans, they don't need to be told any of this stuff. But if you are a skeptic about, another popular pop star, it's so whatever. I understand that to a certain extent, but I think her music is really exceptional, first of all. But I would say that I actually would consider her a force for good. I do not consider her somebody who is kind of a terrible, awful human being. I've been thinking since I saw the movie last night, like, you know, if you went in and you didn't really know Taylor Swift's music, would this movie make you a fan?
Yeah.
I think you need to know the music a little bit. I think that would help. I think that most people, though, would be pretty impressed by just sort of the sheer epicness. Again, it's 2 hours and 45 minutes. Yeah, I mean, there's a, you know, a few weeks ago, A24 re-released Stop Making Sense, which is one of my all-time favorite films. It's a concert film about the Talking Heads that came out in 1984 originally. I consider that one of the greatest films ever, ever, ever made. And I would not put the Eras Tour on that level in terms of artistry. It's not trying to do that. It's not trying to be a sort of distinctive thing. But in terms of a presentation of a pop spectacle, in terms of saying this is a star and this is why she's a star and this is how she connects to her audience, to your point earlier, Todd, about her being a role model, the movie doesn't overly show a bunch of like reaction shots to the audience, but there are a few of them, and you definitely get a sense of a pretty diverse audience You know, every demographic is sort of represented, probably intentionally so in terms of the reaction shots. But there is very much a sense that a huge swath of the listening public really responds to her, and they respond to her music and they identify with what she is singing about, which also I have to say is a remarkable thing because our lives are not like Taylor Swift's life.
No, my life is not like that at all.
She is a massively successful, massively wealthy person, and yet she has enough of a common touch, even after all this time, the lot of young women, but also a lot of other people, relate to what she's singing about.
I think that's key. Relatable, right? So,
yeah.
Also very relatable, Tim Grierson. He is a national film critic. He's going to keep joining us after the break. He's been at the Toronto Film Festival. We'll talk to him about that and get his take on Barbie, Oppenheimer. What has it done to energize the movie base and what's coming up this fall? Stay with us. This is the Todd Allball Show, and this is the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back to the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is now 10 minutes before the hour of 3 o'clock at the top of the hour. Our friend and colleague, Matt Flynn, direct, always a great program. History being made every minute of every day. Matt will have it for you at just after 3 o'clock on Matt Flynn Direct. And then stick around. I'm doing double duty today, filling in for the Devils on the Devils Advocates. Crudy and Dom on a little vacation today. Well-deserved. So I will be in with Nate from 4 until 6. Maybe if you want to stick around, Tim, we'll just keep on talking all afternoon, right?
I'm happy to advocate for the devil. That's no problem. I'm assuming that's the concept of the show.
Well, yes. It's like devil, back and forth, taking two different sides and talking about an issue. But Tim Grierson, he is, we'll call him our favorite film critic. He is a film critic based in Los Angeles, doing a great job. We appreciate having you here, Tim, talking about the Taylor Swift movie. I'd be remiss if our station, our news director, actually, and our station in Richland Center, my hometown, chiming in and saying that the Taylor Swift Eras Tour is at Center Cinema in Richland Center this weekend. Tickets are available at Center Cinema's website. So check that out if you're in Southwest Wisconsin. And again, Tim, just to follow up, this is, you've been to this Toronto Film Festival. Talk to us a little bit, if you'd be so kind, between this Taylor Swift concert film and Barbie and Oppenheimer over the summer. Are movie theaters in America finally starting to get back on track, or is there a long way to go?
I don't know if there's a long way to go, but there is a ways to go still. I think Barbenheimer was really tremendous in terms of being able to energize what people might have thought were two very different fan bases, but turned out to be a lot of overlap, I would say. I think people who just like movies enjoyed the idea of two very different movies and two essentially original films. I know obviously Barbie is based on the Barbie action figure, or rather doll, I should say. But I think for a lot of audiences, they both were looked at as like, oh, these aren't superhero movies. These aren't franchises. They're original films. And I want to support that. And I think also there was a building momentum in the culture of feeling like, this is something I want to be a part of. Like, people I know who don't necessarily go to movies wanted to go to those movies because they felt like they needed to be part of the conversation. And as a big theater lover, it made me very, very happy to see so many posts on social media, on Facebook, of people, you know, taking their daughters to see Barbie and then, you know, taking their kids to see, you know, Oppenheimer, or doing Oppenheimer one day and then Barbie the next day, and even dressing up. I think a lot of people dressed up for Barbie, but also people, I think, kind of for fun, dressed up for Oppenheimer as well.
Right.
And that's the kind of cultural zeitgeisty thing that movies have missed recently, that the theaters have missed. So they were thrilled about that. But, you know, connecting this to the Taylor Swift movie, yes, I think this is a huge deal, and I think theaters are thrilled. I think whether it's the Taylor Swift movie or Barbenheimer, I think the important lesson is studios have to give audiences more than superhero movies.
Yeah.
And you see the recent Marvel movies doing not as well, frankly. And so my hope is that Hollywood will say, okay, we need to come up with more original, even sort of daring, different ideas, as opposed to, oh, we should now make 9 more movies based on Mattel products because people seem interested in Mattel. That is the worry
Does it go back to a good, good writing, in my opinion, again, or at least in large part? My sister, who's about to turn 50, and she won't mind me saying that, but she took both my nieces, one who's 16 and one who's 21. They went to, the three of them went to go see Barbie together, and she came out and she texted me and goes, I had no idea I was going to be bawling in the middle of Barbie. You know, it was a moving experience. And I think at its best, isn't that what movies do for us? They move us.
Yeah. And in very different ways, Oppenheimer and Barbie were great audience theater experiences. They weren't the same experience, but they were both great, and both of them benefited from seeing them on a big screen with a huge audience that you're sort of experiencing the movie with at the same time. And it's hard not to talk about this stuff without sounding like romantic or naive or cliched about, oh, the theatrical experience, yada, yada, yada. But I think what those two movies proved is that the reason why those are cliches is because there's a truth to it. That when you go to a theater and you see something that feels different and you're with an audience that's into the movie, what also helped is both of those movies were good. Both of those movies were good. And so they benefited from the fact that, hey, if you actually make an event movie that is good, people will go and be happy with the experience, as opposed to Super Mario Brothers, which everybody kind of went to because they felt that they had to, and the movie was terrible.
But time-wise goes too fast. Tim Grierson, our film critic from Los Angeles, is with us. Tim, about 3.5 minutes left here. Give us a couple of nuggets, if you'd be so kind, for the fall movies coming up this season. What is on your radar? What are you excited about? What do you think we should go see?
I highly recommend a film called The Zone of Interest, which is the new film from Jonathan Glazer. His last film was Under the Skin, that had Scarlett Johansson in it. This movie is set sort of during the Holocaust, but it is not a Holocaust drama in the way that I think people think of them and sometimes fear, oh, I don't know if I want to sit through another one of these. It's told from a very, very different perspective. It is a fascinating, brilliant film coming out in December. It's called The Zone of Interest. I highly recommend that. I also want to recommend a film called Poor Things, which is the new film from Yorgos Lanthimos. He did The Favourite, which won the Oscar for Olivia Colman a couple years ago, and he did The Lobster before that. He makes funny, strange movies. I'm a big fan of his movies. His new one is called Poor Things. He reunites with Emma Stone, who is in The Favourite. She plays a woman who dies at the very beginning and is brought back to life somewhat Frankenstein style by a sort of mad doctor played by Willem Dafoe. The movie gets weirder and kinkier and funnier from there. It is also coming out in December. Highly recommend that as well.
All right, very good. How about the new, I forget the name of it now, the new Leonardo DiCaprio movie? Is that just over the top? Is it not going to be any good, or you think it's going to be okay? Have you seen it?
I have. Killers of the Flower Moon is the new Martin Scorsese film. Yeah. I saw it at Cannes, and it's going to open October 20th, so pretty darn soon. It is a story about, it's based on a true story, about a Native American community decades and decades ago that found oil on their land, and the terrible things that happened because they had oil on their land, and essentially white Americans wanting to take advantage of that for themselves. It stars Leonardo DiCaprio. Yeah. It has Lily Gladstone, who was tremendous in a film from a few years ago called Certain Women. If people watch the TV show Reservation Dogs, she's on that show as well. She's really tremendous in this movie. She may win an Oscar for her performance.
So overall, the movie, yes, no, maybe?
Overall, the movie, yes, definitely.
All right, fantastic. Say yes to Tim Grierson. Follow him on socials. Make sure you follow his reviews as well. Tim Grierson, we appreciate you so, so much. Fantastic guest, fantastic insight. Please come back anytime.
It's my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Our pleasure is all ours. Also, thanks to Alex Schur from the Wisconsin State Journal and also part of the Jewish community here in Madison for sharing his thoughts today on the tragedy in Israel. Stay tuned now as Matt Flynn Direct is next. Don't go anywhere. Remember, whatever you're fighting for, whatever you believe in, keep banging your drum. Banging on your drum.